Earning your degree online doesn't mean you have to go about it alone. At Capella University, we're here to support you when you're ready. From enrollment counselors who get to know you and your goals, to academic coaches who can help you form a plan to stay on track, we care about your success and are dedicated to helping you pursue your goals. Going back to school is a big step, but having support at every step of your academic journey can make a big difference. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.
This is Movers and Shakers, where we interview the upcoming generation of Make It Happen multifamily investors to share their story.
Welcome to the Movers and Shakers podcast. My name is Gino Barbaro, co-founder of Jake and Gino, multifamily investor, educator, father, mentor, and I am joined by my co-host, Joshua Ryan Rusin, the community director of Jake and Gino. Josh, how are you doing today?
Gino, man, still riding off a high. Last night we had our Closers Club webinar, and this is where students present a case study of a recent deal they've closed. And something that was really monumental that hit me last night was how far someone has really gone. A lot of times we're always focusing on the next goal and what's next. But when you look and reflect back, it's really amazing to see how far others have come. And that really inspired me. So I'm still riding the high off that. Gino, what's going on in your world?
Well, same thing with me, Josh. You know, we always looking at what we're going to, but sometimes you have to take a stop and just reflect on what we've accomplished. And, you know, success to me is, you know, how you feel about something. I mean, I feel successful creating the Jake and Gino community, and it doesn't matter how many deals students have closed with that. We're always looking at metrics to measure. Just take a look at where you are in your life right now. You are where you're supposed to be to where you want to go. That's the way I look at it right now. And I'm excited to have, you know, these two guests on today because they've had a long journey in multifamily and, you know, it took them a little while to get going, but I think they had a strong enough why, and we're going to dive into it on this call.
Yeah. Speaking of today's guests, we have Mike Shaughnessy and Bernie Leotz. Bernie has an extensive background running high performing teams at scale and successfully manages multi-million dollar operations worldwide. He began his investing career in 2018 with single-family homes, but transitioned to multifamily in 2019. He's a general partner of $5 million in assets and a passive investor in 6 units in Georgia. Mike is a senior executive, retired Air Force officer, and combat leader. He has over 25 years' experience in investing, real estate, and business. He transitioned to multifamily in 2019 and was a general partner of $5 million of assets and a passive investor in 6 units in Georgia as well. Together, the guys co-founded and launched Elemental Equity, a Boise-based commercial real estate investment firm that focuses on helping successful W-2 earners achieve financial freedom through real estate investing. Without further ado, welcome to the show, gentlemen.
Hi, guys.
Thanks for having us. Appreciate it.
Of course. All right, so let's talk about this. Independently, you both found real estate, and then you met each other. I guess, give me those stories. And Mike, we can start with you.
Okay, great. So Bernie and I worked together at our W-2 job. We work for a great company, and we've had a lot of interaction over the years. We have a great chemistry. We work well together. We go back and forth on ideas, and we always share ideas about the next new thing and regarding our regular work. And so at one point, Bernie and I had been talking about, you know, kind of what's next for us and what are we going to do in our life to leave our legacy. And Bernie had this crazy idea. He was buying some single family houses. And I had done some investing in houses. And he said, hey, I'm thinking about this multifamily thing. And there's some great resources you should take a look at. And he gave me some books and some podcasts. One of the first ones was the Jake and Gino Wheelbarrow Profits. And so I started diving in there, started listening to it. And about a week later, after listening to probably 20 or 30 hours of podcasts, I said, okay, I'm in, Bernie, let's do this thing. And so that's kind of where we started.
Awesome. You know, let me ask you this. What was the light bulb moment in multifamily where you're like, all right, this is it. This is the vehicle. This is what I want to do.
There's a couple. One of them was the power of cost segregation and being able to shield some of the gains that you had with losses. Another one was syndication and learning about syndication and what we could do. And I have a pretty vast network. So trying to bring that to the table and use other people's money to really lever up what we were doing and being able to help other people. And, you know, our goal is, I think, like a lot of people in the Jake and Gino community, is we want to provide really quality places for people to live at the same time, helping them out, but, you know, helping investors out and making this a really symbiotic relationship for all the partners.
Bernie, before you jump in, I got to ask Mike, honestly, What did you think of when you first heard multifamily? Did you think Bernie was crazy? Did you say, how are we going to buy this apartment complex? Because you threw out the word syndication. The average person has no idea what syndication is and how to raise capital or how to become a limited partner. So honestly, what were your thoughts initially, like that feeling that you got when he first told you?
Well, I think you're exactly right. I think the first thing is where are we going to get the money? Because, you know, mm-hmm. I'm going to sell my house. You're going to sell your house and we're going to invest our money, but that's not enough to buy, you know, 20 units or 40 units or whatever it is. We don't have the money to do that. And mm-hmm. then when I started learning that really you go out and you bring together a bunch of people and you really capitalize off that with them and you make it so everybody wins. That's how you do it. You know, mm-hmm. you find people who believe in that. You find people who believe in you and you take it to the next level. And so then the light bulb went off and it was the aha moment, like you said. Mm-hmm.
Bernie, gave it to me, bro.
Yeah, I would say I didn't need a commission from you guys for recruiting Mike. I didn't do that. I haven't seen that check yet, you know, but yeah, I started like a lot of guys did, right? I, you know, 4 years ago, I decided to get into real estate. You know, I wanted to get into real estate for probably 20 years. I finally decided to do it and kind of fell into the bigger pockets form, things like that. And, you know, just to limited beliefs and not thinking I could do it with other people, I, you know, kind of said, let's try single family homes. Right. And it sounds really great, but you're running your own cash pretty fast. And my wife and I did that, ran out of cash and it didn't make sense. And so we wanted to transition to multifamily, but I was like, Mike, it was overwhelming. It was like, gosh, where do we go? How do we raise money? Where do we find deals? Right. You know, we're in the Boise, Idaho market and everything here is trading at a, you know, a 4 to 5 cap. And so, you know, they want $250,000 a door for $1,200 a month in rent. And how does that pencil out? Right. Mm-hmm. You know, can't even afford a duplex half the time. So that was a big thing for the aha for us is, you know, Mike and I were doing that. So, you know, when my wife and I were talking about it and talking with Mike is this isn't to leave our jobs right now. Right. This is to build alternative streams of income for us. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what we want to do is you look at anybody who is successful and wealthy, they've got multiple streams of income. Right. And so Mike and I wanted to kind of just kind of hedge our bets and say, what can we do outside of our own jobs that we're doing well at, but to grab more income for ourselves, start to build a legacy for our family that we could pass along. Right. And that was the big aha. And so that's why real estate is so attractive to us. And it's also the fact that we don't have to worry about selling widgets every month to make our things right. We just make sure that we offer quality housing mm-hmm. with a, you know, a 10 to 15 year business plan. And I think that always lines up for us. So that's kind of how we got into it together. And you know, we've synced since his first day in the job that we started working together, and it's only gotten deeper as we've worked together for the last couple of years.
Bernie, let me dive a little bit deeper. Why did it take you 20 years to convince yourself for multifamily or for real estate in general?
I'm a late maturer. You know, I didn't get married until I was 42, so everything kind of slow in my life, right? It was, you know, limited belief, right? You think like, how do we like successful? It's like, well, I'll get a really good job and I'll make money and I'll get promotions, that kind of stuff. And you never really kind of stop to plan out. And it wasn't disciplined in my approach. And so that's kind of why it took a long time. But then, you know, you mature a little bit and you get married and start having a family. It's like, okay, I need to do more just in case things happen. Mm-hmm. And real estate was a really attractive thing. And we had the means at the time to do it. And so that was really attractive. And so then, you know, we started with the single family houses and then we laid all our chips on the table and sold our primary house and rented for a while to have cash to infuse in our first deal.
How did that conversation go with your wife?
It went okay, really well until we actually, so the day we signed the contract with the real estate agent, put our house on the market, that night we found out she was pregnant. And so it was one of those like, oh crap, we're doing everything at the same time. And so it was interesting to do, but you know, we went for it and it's kind of the least family way. We just do things 100 miles an hour. And, you know, she's been a great partner, really supportive the whole time. And she's been, you know, super supportive, you know, Mike's wife as well too. They've been, you know, partners in our crazy ideas over the last couple of years and we couldn't have done it without them.
This is important, everybody. It seems as if Bernie painted the nice picture for his wife. It's not about financial freedom. It's not about taking risks. It's about investing in their education, learning what they're doing and not shooting by the hip, even though he seems as if he's like, I'm jumping into this. I think it's really planned. And I think, Josh, the second thing, I love to call this show Behaviors Are Belief Driven. Because if you believe in something and you educate yourself, now all of a sudden syndication is a vernacular that they know. And they know that it's not just about their own capital. And all of a sudden the light bulb went off and says, well, I can raise money for these deals. If you don't know that, you will never take that next step into real estate. And I think that was the big aha moment for Bernie and Mike. Am I correct on that assumption?
That's absolutely correct. So being able to leverage other people's money is the most powerful thing out of the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. So Bernie, when you joined Jake and Gino, what were your really challenging points, your stuck points that you were looking for from the community?
I was hoping to, Gino, to find out, you know, how do you evaluate deals correctly? And then, you know, what's the best way to approach a market, especially our market here, right? We tried to start locally here in Boise. And like I said, you know, cap rates are low. And we said, well, what about Salt Lake City? Because it's only 4 hours away by car, and cap rates are even lower there, right? And great markets. But, you know, when you're trying to start out, you know, getting to an 8-unit will still cost you, you know, $2.5 million. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't have $2.5 million, right, to put down. And so that was the challenging thing. And then so that after that, I really leveraged the community to find out, okay, we're going to invest out of state, and we're going to invest in a state that we can't reach probably in a couple-hour drive. And so how do you do that correctly? And that's where, you know, Bill Hamm and your guys' advice, things like that, has really helped us out to create networks, evaluate markets correctly, you know, find good people on the ground that can help you with those initial cursory reviews of a property to make sure it even makes sense to move forward on the offer or not.
Mike, I have a question for you about partnerships, because it seems as if you guys click from the beginning. For all the listeners out there, what has made your partnership successful? What should you do on the front end to partner up with somebody?
But I think you have to know what their capabilities are, what they're good at, what they like to do, and you know what you like to do. And it's important that you have some self-reflection in that as well. So in our situation, Bernie's a very analytical guy. And so he loves doing the underwriting, and he sits there with the numbers. And you know, I don't mind the numbers, but I'm the guy who likes to go out and talk to people and tell them what we're doing and why we're doing it and why it's powerful. Mm-hmm. And so that's been pretty good. On the other side, Bernie, you know, lets me handle all the little back end nitinoids. And so I take that portion off his plate so he can go out and talk to people about new deals. Mm-hmm. And so we're both working different sides of the program so that we make sure we have strong fundamentals on the back end so that we build a repeatable process. And I'm making sure all that's happening. Well, Bernie's out looking for the next deal and talking to brokers and then doing the underwriting to make sure that something looks good for us. So, you know, the important part is that we both kind of fell into our role because we've known each other so long and we trust each other implicitly.
I think it's important. What I'm hearing you say is you really need to trust the person that you're going to business with. You need to set some type of expectations where you're doing your role, he's doing his role. And maybe in the beginning, maybe an I'm a mentality, I'm going to do all this. But then at some point, you start segregating responsibilities where if you're good at one task and he's good at another task, maybe stay in your own lanes, go in every now and again, and you know, basically try to help each other out. Bernie, would you add anything else to that?
I think the good thing, Gino, for us is Mike and I are pretty fluid, right? So it's not like he can't underwrite or I can't raise money.
Yes.
But I think, you know, we have these strengths that are primary, but then if we need to fall back, like Mike's too busy, I could, you know, take it in. Or if I'm too busy, Mike could do a quick underwrite of a deal to make sure it makes sense or not and get back to the broker quickly. That's the good thing about us. And I think we also have the same mentality of we're both scalers. You know, in our current W-2 jobs, we have to scale big operations worldwide with teams of, you know, hundreds across the globe that we can't manage directly. And so we've applied those same principles to our real estate business of, you know, how do we scale our business and set this up so that we're not struggling when we go from 48 units to 4,800 units or even 480 units, right? How do we put that in place now? We're building it now so that we can scale quickly and not have to worry about that. So that's the having that same type of approach has been a really key aspect of our partnership as well.
I love that. We build multifamily entrepreneurs at Jake and Gino. Can you give me an idea of a couple of those systems that you're implementing your business to scale?
And I think, you know, a simple one is just, I mean, this is so simple, but it's the start of success is how do you organize your data, right? Mm. So when you start syndicating, you've got so many different pages of information, so many investors, you need something for every single person, you need multiple forms signed. And if you just take that and stick it in your inbox, the day you need to figure out what's going on, it's going to take you hours. But before you close a deal, if you put every single piece in a different folder in the right spot, you know, that's a simple thing that's going to save you tens of hours down the road. And so those are the kind of things that we set up at our regular jobs. And, you know, we bring that to the table here. You know, where can Bernie go in and find something if I win the lottery and I walk away, right, with a couple hundred million bucks? Not that I won't still do this, but, you know, Bernie will be able to find it as he runs the day-to-day operations. Right. Mm-hmm. And I think that's important is that we can both know where the other has things so that we don't have to bother each other and waste time.
You want to give an example, Bernie, as well?
Yeah, on the investor relations side, Gino, right? I mean, our communication with our investors, we've tried to systematize those as much as possible, right? So they're regular. And even as we approach deals and do deals as well, too, we put the same process in place that we can get back to brokers quickly. Now, as we start to do deals and talk to bankers and talk to our property manager group, right, we can do these things really quickly from a long distance. And it's systematized. There's a process in place. So whether we're looking at a 16-unit deal or a 75-unit deal, right, we have the same process ready to go. And either Mike and I can do it while we're doing it on the real time, even though we're working our full-time job, right? It's easy to do.
So that's why we call it the buy right, the manage right, and the finance right. The manage right portion is very important. You're managing the asset, but you're also managing the investors, because I think everybody out there doesn't understand that you two are asset managers right now. Even if you're not property managing, you're an asset manager. You're a fiduciary of other people's money. And even so, if you're dealing deals yourself, you're still a fiduciary of your own money and your partner's money. So it's really important to start implementing these systems early on, because everyone always tells me, is this the right time to get into multifamily? It's always the right time. Because you need lead time. You need to create those relationships. You need to learn the systems. You need to start implementing the systems. You need to start raising the capital. You need to start looking for the deals. There's a lot of different things that need to go on. And like Bernie said, when he first started, Boise was a hot market. It's still a hot market for, I mean, a lot of different reasons. It may not be a great place to start. There may not be enough inventory. So he had to shift and he had to go into a different market. Can you tell us of that first deal, Bernie, how long it took and, you know, how you found the deal and the certain metrics of that deal?
Yeah, it was kind of stumbled along. You know, we'd had a lot of false starts, right? We'd been under contract. Mike and I got a contract in Clarksville, Tennessee back in, I think it was January of 2019. No, 2020, right? It was last year, Mike? Gosh, time flies. And we got it in. It was a good deal, not a great deal, Gino, right? But it was a good deal. And we had some investors lined up and we went to the inspection. We were kind of halfway through. And then guess something called COVID happened. Mm-hmm. And a lot of our investors are in California and they're like, we're getting locked down here. And we had to back out of that deal, right? And I think we took some lessons from that deal and said, like, okay, maybe we might have forced that deal, right? It wasn't a great deal. We might have forced just to try to get into it. Mm-hmm. And then we just kept looking, right? We kept grinding and had a couple other deals. And finally, we found this one. It was a public thing down in Tullahoma, Tennessee. And it was a really good deal by the hour outside of Nashville. Called up the broker, started talking through it, and it made sense, right? We underwrote it. It was going to be a tough deal to do for us as a first timer, but it made sense. And we, you know, stumbled along enough that when we were talking to brokers, we knew what to say. And we spoke their language, or they took us seriously, which was really good. Mm-hmm. And then Mike and I already had some investors lined up from the first deal that didn't go through. So we had the confidence that we could raise the cash for this one as well, too. And then we just started to crank through.
Let's go back to that first deal that you didn't go through that. And what happened? What other learning lessons did you take from that? Because we could blame COVID and what else happened in that deal? Because people were closing deals during that time. And what did you see the highlights of that deal that you were like, you know what? Because you just said it wasn't that great of a deal. So I think intuitively you knew, you know what? For my first deal, I don't want to just wing it. I don't think this is the right deal. And that kudos to you. There's that patience, probably getting on the calls with the coaches saying, you know what? Maybe you should pass on this deal. Let's dive a little bit deeper into that first deal, if you don't mind.
Yeah, so we underwrote it with pretty aggressive rent increases just because the market was going pretty strong.
Yes.
And we went through, and after the inspection, it found out that, you know, water heaters and HVACs were almost past their useful life. Mm-hmm. And we didn't have budget for that. And the seller came back and was like, sorry, you know, this is a hot market. You want to, you take it as price is. And so, you know, Mike and I kind of whittled back our ownership percentage a little bit on that one to get the cash on cash returns up for our investors. And, you know, again, forcing it through. You know, the big lesson for us was that we took away, Gina, was like, try to be more conservative on your underwriting so that you kind of under promise on the investor piece. Yes. And don't put yourself in a position where one bad CapEx thing happens and you have to make that really uncomfortable call to your investors saying, hey, we're not going to pay out dividends this year. Ha ha. So I think those are the things, right, that we really took away. And then for Mike and I is be willing to walk away from a deal, even though we want it really bad. Mm-hmm. Be willing to kind of step back and say, like, if it doesn't fit our numbers and our criteria, it's okay to pass, right? There are other deals out there.
I love that. Mike, can you add to that?
Yeah, I think what Bernie said is right. You know, don't fall in love with the deal just because you got to get a deal done, you know? And in fact, we just walked away from another deal because it was a pig dressed up with lipstick, right? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we don't want to end up in a situation where we're going to lose money for ourselves or our investors. And we want to make sure we're doing the right thing and not fall in love with it and feel like we have to get a deal done, because we've already proven we can get deals done. And so, you know, just continue looking, and there are things out there that are great. And that's what we ended up finding.
guys, I have to be completely honest with you. I wish that I had the insight that you two have on your first deal. I didn't have the Jake and Gino community. I didn't have mentorship in the very beginning. I bought my first deal the complete opposite of what you did. I bought an older asset, same thing, same mistakes you made, but you didn't make that mistake. I wish I had Jake and Gino SaveMyAss.com. I had just Gino, and I was winging it on my very first deal years and years ago. I made every mistake that you didn't make. I under budgeted. I overfixed. I thought I was going to get rent growth. I didn't know the office market. I didn't know how to do leases for commercial leases. The market itself sucked. I bought at a bad time in the market cycle. I didn't have the three pillars of real estate where I didn't know the exit strategy. So all these mistakes that you avoided, I committed on my first one. So it's really kudos to see where you guys are at that level. I think we're always looking at, hey, success is closing that first deal. No, success is not closing that first deal. Success is avoiding losing that money in that first deal and saying, you know what, there's learning lessons here. Most people would have chalked it up and said, you know what, this is not right for me. I don't want to do this. There's no deals out there. Instead, you guys took that as a learning lesson. That's very important, everybody listening on the call right now, because it's all the way you look at things. That could have been a big defeat. COVID's coming, you know, rent growth. You did the right thing because we didn't know where rents were going. Even though that's a hot market, rents probably stabilized for a little while. You'd run the rate. And then looking at that CapEx, the CapEx tsunami that Bill Hamm talks about, that's something scary. That's something real where you have to budget it. And novice investors like myself, when I first did my first deal, underestimate that. That money has to come from somewhere. So that's so accurate, so spot on. I'm glad you guys both shared that story with me. Now on this next deal, when you guys closed, what did you like about it? And Bernie, I love the way you're saying it didn't fit our criteria, the buy right criteria. We all have our own buy right criteria, correct? So something that works for you may not work for somebody else. What was this next deal, the deal that you closed on? What did you like about it?
Well, it was a three-year-old unit, so brand new. Mm-hmm. It had Class A amenities, granite countertops, really nice LVP, you know, commercial grade carpeting, sprinkler system throughout. So we knew there was not a big CapEx requirement. Mm-hmm. Talking to the broker, it was a mom and pop owned. It was a developer who just kind of slapped this up. He had extra land, slapped it up, and he put his wife in charge of it. And when COVID happened, she freaked out and she just, you know, dropped the rents just to get people in the door. Mm. And so what we liked about it was from a deal aspect, Gino is a property manager had come in last summer and it already raised rents from $975 to $1,100. That didn't mean anything. So we knew there was a way to raise rents down the line. Mm-hmm. What we also liked about it is from an investor standpoint, we could sell a really nice story to our investors, which is it's an emerging market. It's close to a major city of Nashville. It's got Class A amenities, right? This is a great, great place to be. And by the way, there's no CapEx surprises, right? These are mm-hmm. The ACs are 3 years old. The roofs are only 3 years old, right? Water heaters are only 3 years old, right? We can guarantee these returns for a long time. And this is a good property for us to hold because Michael and I like to hold forever if we can. And so we're not looking to flip. And so for our investors, the guys, the gals that we talk to, they're all successful W-2 earners as well. And they're all looking for just alternative streams of income. So they're not looking to throw in $50,000 and turn into 102 years. They're okay with this, you know, growing slowly over time. And so that was a really easy sell for us overall. And it was a fascinating thing to be. And, you know, Mike was out there just raising cash as fast as he could. And it was amazing. It was a great story.
I love that. I'm just writing down, know your investors. That is excellent. Everything you've said is so spot on. The story, you're buying the right asset in the right part of the market cycle. It's a newer asset. Something happens. You're planning for the long term. If you don't get cash flow day one, you're looking for the growth of the market. You're buying in a high growth market. Didn't mean to steal your thunder, Mike, because I want you to share with that. But those things are just so popping out of me. I mean, the education is just shining through. I mean, you've got your credibility book out. You're talking to investors. You know exactly what you're focusing on. You like the market. Mike, what you want to add anything to that?
Well, you know, when you think about the safety of the asset at the time, mm-hmm. we were still deep in COVID when we started looking at this asset. Things were still unknown, but we knew that this had solid cash on cash walking in the door. We knew this was the best asset in the area. It was a really high quality asset. And so that was the story we could tell. Mm-hmm. We could talk to our investors, give them an alternative because who knew what was going to happen with the stock market. Mm-hmm. And so give them some diversification, give them the ability. Not only that, what we wanted to do is we wanted to build long-term investors. And so, you know, doing something risky with new investors, if you can sell them on something that's safe and solid, then, you know, down the line and you can improve that like we're doing and come up with better returns than they initially expected. Now we're going to have investors for the long term. We can set up our processes. We don't have, you know, on the first deal, we don't have all these surprises. We can get things stabilized quickly. We can get our building blocks in and our processes set up, our communications, our cadence with that. And so now we can scale that, right? Mm-hmm. Gave us the ability to scale instead of scrambling to do all these other things on rehab and renos. You know, we were able to start thinking about how do we scale this business up and really get it to where we can manage it long-term.
I love this. You guys are using business scale because that's what it really is. People look at it sometimes as just real estate. You guys are looking at it as an entrepreneurial venture. Now, you've closed on a second deal, correct, Bernie?
Yeah, we just closed on it last week. You know, yeah, that was in about 2 miles away from our first deal. And that came about as off market. So we had a partner in the first deal that helped us as a key principal for our agency debt. And then he has network and he got a deal on a plate and it was just a great deal off market, a little bit of a value out in this one. Mm-hmm. But for us, it made sense. Right. And so, you know, we talked about when momentum, Mike and I even talked about it. Right. And that first deal is important. I mean, like, we're not going to get rich in the first deal, but that first deal is going to get us in the door and we're going to get rich on the 25th and 26th and 27th deal. Right. I think that's what we're doing. And going back to his point too, Gino, is when we talk to the investors too, we're talking about lifetime value here. Right? There are investors, there are customers. Right. And so, yes. You know, you look and go like, wow, that guy's got or gal's got $100,000. We need that now. It's like, well, yeah, but if you don't deliver, mm-hmm. that's all you get. Right. Yes. And so, you know, we want people to come in and say, this is a great opportunity for us to diversify. And so on the second deal that we got, a lot of the people that invested in the second deal were people that invested in the first deal. Mm-hmm. And that was because Mike and I had proven it, right? We closed in February in the first deal and we cut the first dividend check in April. Right. We were cutting checks right away to people. And that's how you deliver. Right. Mm-hmm. And that's what when we talk about scaling and building this long term. That's what Mike and I are doing here is, you know, we want to make sure we deliver for our investors all the time. Even so, and we would prefer to walk away from bad deals that don't do that.
So, Bernie, I want to know how you stuck in so long. I mean, it took you a long time to get that first deal. I mean, you went through COVID. You came to a Manage Right boot camp. You did what you needed to do. You're on the education, but it took you a long time to find that first deal. But ironically enough, you did the Jake and Gino path. It took Jake and myself 18 months to find that first deal. But 3 months later, we found our second deal. And that's what you talk about, the power of momentum and the power of proximity. What made you stay in the game that long to get that first deal?
Well, I'm too stupid to quit.
That's my excuse. You can't use that one. I'm sorry.
You know, he wrangled me in too, so I wasn't going to let him quit. You know, right. We were committed to this now.
Uh-huh. Okay, but why were you committed? I mean, a lot of us get committed just to lose weight, to work more with our family, to start a business, but there's commitment. But what really locked you in? Because 24 months, it's a long time going through one of the biggest pandemics, you know, ever. The landscape is changing. You guys can't even go out to see markets. You can't get on planes to go look at deals. I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on. You can't network the traditional way. There's a lot of stuff, a lot of barriers that were thrown in your way. Bernie, first, what made you not quit?
Well, we knew it was a good deal, right? We knew multifamily is a great investment, you know, long-term, right? But I think that, you know, for us, it was the personal why, right? And so, you know, I have a beautiful wife and a daughter, and then we had a little baby boy in October 2019, right? And he went through some health issues initially. And, you know, and spending that time at home is like, you know, I don't want to be working 12 hours a day mm-hmm. and not have that opportunity, right, to spend time with him or have the means to help him out or my wife or daughter out as well, too, right? And so, you know, looking through that, it was take care of the family first and how to do that. And I think the real estate thing for us was a great way for us to build that alternative income stream. Mm-hmm. And honestly, I have a lot of friends who are invested in our deals here, right? And I want to help them out, too. I know they're struggling sometimes, too. And like, gosh, man, you know, with COVID, my job got cut back on my hours and things are tight. So this is a way for us to help them as well, too, because it's no fun getting rich by yourself, right? Mm-hmm. Who wants to sit on the beach alone, right? It's great bringing other people along with us.
I agree with you. That's why I got Josh on the call right here. I'm trying to make Josh rich as well. So I feel it. Seek to serve, my friend. Mike, I want to hear from you, Mike.
Yeah. So for me, I've been through a lot of different things. I have an Ivy League MBA. I worked on Wall Street for a while.
So you're the smart guy then, huh? Bernie's the stupid one. You're the smart one. Okay, we've got that cleared
guy,
up, Bernie.
I'm just the guy who's got the piece of paper. Bernie's the smart one. But, you know, I've been through a lot of things. And I've been around the block enough to see a good deal and know that if you put in the effort here, it's not passing. You know, it's the true potential is there. And this is a great way to leave a legacy without – you know, yeah, you have your day-to-day job. We have our W-2 income. That's great. That mm-hmm. pays for my lifestyle, but I want to build something for my family. And this is a way to build long-term value. And, you know, if it leads to something longer over the long term, a bigger for me, a bigger role, that's great, because I never want to be retired. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I think what we're doing is valuable. I like the concept of helping other people out, whether it's our investors or the people who live in our apartments. And so all those things make me feel really good about what we're doing, you know, and yeah. Even the government wants us to do well. And I say that not jokingly, I say that for real after listening to one of the podcasts on your show about one of the guests who talked about things like cost segregation and the ability of the government to provide financing. You know, people want people to have good places to live. That feels really good. That's mm-hmm. a good feeling. You know, when you can succeed doing that, you're doing well in life.
I love that. Let's take a quick time out to hear from our sponsors.
Gino, I know a lot of our listeners are wanting to take their multifamily investing business to the next level. I know that you've been hard at work helping Jake and Gino students do just that using our framework. Can you explain to the listeners how they can get our help?
Guys, we've been hard at work growing our community of like-minded investors, and the results of our members has been nothing short of incredible. We're looking to grow this amazing group. What we're looking for is those who want to follow our proprietary framework that we've created. Buy right, manage right, and finance right. Leverage our connections, education, and mentorship as ways to take your business to the next level.
So if you're interested in finding out more about how you can become a part of our amazing community, apply to work with us at jakeandgino.com/apply.
All right, gentlemen, I got some short answer questions here for you. So Bernie, we'll start with you. If I'm a new listener listening to the show, right, and I want to get into multifamily, what's the best advice you give that new investor?
Sign up with Jake and Gino. Is that
the- He's the smart one now. You see that? He went from being the stupid guy to the smart guy. So I like that.
Buy honeybee, all that kind of stuff. All the good stuff. I would say this, right? Is surround yourself with people who are smarter and more successful than you are, right? And that's been mine. That's why I'm with Mike, right? It is the network we're part of and the partnerships you pick. It's okay to, you know, to be the novice in the room. Be okay with the fact that you don't know most of the answers, right? And I think they'll go out and just seek to learn as much as possible and to provide value. You know, when Mike and I were doing this first, right, we had our first deal, we couldn't have qualified for agency debt. So we gave up a chunk of our ownership to somebody who was experienced but could qualify. And he's really helped us out. I mean, he's led us in more deals down the line, right? So mm-hmm. if you look at the short term, like, well, I want to own this big piece because I want extra cash, that's the wrong way to look at it. Look at it like, get a little piece of something, but the education you receive and the experience you receive is invaluable, right? There's no price tag to it. So I think those are the things I would say is, you know, get out there and take action, you know, stop talking about it. Just get out there and do it.
It only took you 20 years, Bernie, right? So if anyone out there is listening, I'm sure they've taken less than 20. So take his advice, take the action. But what also Bernie said there, that's important, Josh and Mike, it's the long view mindset. You need to have, we call it the 100-year real estate mindset. You need to have that long-term mindset. Don't worry about today or tomorrow. Plan your life out 3, 5, 10 years. What is it going to look like? Because what you're doing today is affecting your children and your grandchildren. And if you think of it that way, you're not going to be sitting on the sidelines wanting to get into real estate. You're going to want to get into it tomorrow because those actions are going to affect generations to come.
Man, I love that. Mike, how about for you?
Yeah, for me, it's do something today to move the ball forward, right? Mm-hmm. And don't be afraid to jump in and say, what I expect to happen is not happening. Why is it not happening? Even if you don't understand, because this is your business, this is your life, this is your money. And so, you know, make sure you ask the questions, make sure you pick something up and make it happen. That happened so many times when we were trying to close our first deal with the agency debt where, hey, we're paying this attorney and I really don't understand what's going on, but they're not doing the right thing. Or, you know, the closing, the title company's not doing what they need to do. And they're just not talking to each other, right? There's mm-hmm. so many parties where we had to jump in. We didn't really know what was going on, but we jumped in and said, hey, how do we make this work? What can we do here to push this ball forward? And had we not done that, that deal wouldn't have closed. Mm-hmm. And so that's the way Bernie is. That's the way I am. That's a predisposition, but you got to get in the trenches to push the ball forward every day.
Man, I love that, being proactive. And honestly, that reminds me of the compound effect, right? Let's say I go to the gym one day, it's probably not going to produce a lot of change, but over a long period of time, it's going to absolutely move the needle. So that's great advice. Okay, what about your guys' favorite book you've ever read and why?
Yeah, so I can share. I'm a big fan of leadership books. Mm-hmm. And so I recently read a book. It's one of my favorites. It's my current favorite. It's called Endurance, and it's about Shackleton's incredible voyage. You know, like, how does that apply to business, or how does that apply to life? And so, you know, these guys did a transpolar expedition in 1914, and their boat got stuck in ice. And Shackleton had a plan. He figured out how to get everybody out of there alive. They camped on ice. I mean, there's leadership lessons galore in there on moving the ball forward and about being forward thinking about what your next step is and how do I take care of everybody I need to take care of in a timely fashion at the same time you're suffering. And so it's all about doing the right thing, keeping focused and taking care of your people, which is awesome.
Love that.
Bernie?
Yeah, I got a lot of favorite books. I think the most recent one I read was the one from Scott Adams, is How to Fail at Almost Everything and Still Win Big. And the reason I like that is just because, you know, his life has been, he just tries new things and he fails it. He takes the lessons from those and applies that to the next venture that he has. And it's similar to what Mike and I do here as well, as, you know, we were successful, right? It took 2 years to close that first deal, but we never got discouraged, never looked at it as like, wow, that was a failure. It was like, okay, it didn't work, but what could we learn to apply to the next one? And then, you know, also in his big, he's big about processes and systems, you know, and that's what Mike and I want to do as well too, just to make sure we can make it repeatable down the line. And that this, that, you know, us scaling and being successful isn't difficult as it was, you know, when we first started. So that's a big one. And Josh, going back to Mike's point too, about this first thing is, I think, you know, part of that taking action, moving the ball forward, is not to get caught up in fear of losing money or reputation. You know, Mike and I spent over $5,000 on our first deal that didn't close, right? We walked away from $5,000. We didn't look at it as like, ah, not a big deal, right? Or we didn't look at it as like, wow, that's terrible. We looked at it as like, ah, that's our education for this year, right? That's what we paid for. That was a master class in negotiations and how to, you know, do a deal. And that's how we looked at it, right? Not a big deal. And this last deal we walked away from, we're walking away from several thousand dollars as well, right? And that's okay, right? That's just the price of playing this game. And that's okay.
Mm-hmm. Love that. Fail forward. All right, last question for you. Best habit for success, gentlemen.
Mine's just waking up every day with the mindset that I need to get something done today. What is it? And continuing to push myself forward.
I'm not very sexy as well. I don't have like a Zen garden rake or that kind of stuff, Gino. And I don't wake up at 4 a.m. to chant or do meditation. But
dude, I don't either. I'm a 7 o'clock a.m. guy. I like to sleep in the morning. I got kids keeping me up at night. So 7 a.m., I'm getting up. So
yeah, I'm with you. I'm like Mike. I think for me, it's just about, you know, looking at the challenges that happen and actually taking joy in solving those problems, right? It's really kind of fun to fix things and, you know, to solve the puzzle, put the Tetris piece together, however you want to call it. We enjoy those types of things. And we look at all these challenges that come with us, not as like a, wow, that's an impediment. It's like, okay, we can solve that and differentiate ourselves from other people who maybe can't do that. And that'll lead to more success down the line for us.
Bernie, I love that. Looking at challenges and opportunities to get better. And when you take that mindset shift, then you don't get mad about them. Like, oh crap, I'm running this. You're like, hey, this is an opportunity to get better and be better. So that's powerful. So, all right, listen, gentlemen, this has been an amazing episode. And honestly, I have a ton of takeaways in here. A few of them that really stood out to me is honestly the recipe for a successful business partnership. You have skill sets that complement each other and trust. I think that's super key. Another one that I really liked you guys do is the organization that you have leads to operational efficiency. That stood out to me tremendously. And treating your investors and tenants right, and you'll have repeat customers. I mean, those are big keys in business. Gino, what am I leaving on the table with this one?
Wow. So I'd love to shoot a little recap story on this. Josh, picture this. It's Bernie. It's about 2018-19. He goes to his wife and he says, I think we're going to sell our home. I want to get into this multifamily thing. And I would have loved to have been a little fly on the wall in that conversation, how it went initially. But as we can tell, Bernie is a late bloomer. He's really analytical. He's really thoughtful. He really thinks about things. And when he makes his decision, he makes his mind up. He goes for it. Mike, sitting across the desk from him at work, he puts a little bug in his ear about listening to Jake and Gino, and Mike starts voraciously listening. And one of them, the cost segregation, catches his ear, and he says, well, this multifamily thing may make sense, but how do we get into it? They join the Jake and Gino community, and it's taken a while. It took a little while to get traction. They went to look at a deal during COVID in Clarksville, Tennessee, which is a good market, but they saw a lot of red flags, and they actually walked away from it, right? No deal is better than a bad deal. They learn the three pillars of real estate. They learn the buy right, manage right, finance right. And sooner or later, with their patience and their persistence, they landed a great deal. And what I love about Bernie, he has the go-giver mentality where it's not everything. He doesn't want everything. He's willing to share. That's part of the negotiation. He wants to create that ultimate, we don't want to call it a win-win, but we both want to feel as if we've won on each side. And that's what I think has made him successful in that first deal. And now that second deal came with momentum, Josh. That momentum is truly important, and it is out there. It really happens. Very similar to what happened to Jake and myself. They get their second deal. And now, where do they raise the capital from the second deal? For most of their investors that they satisfied in their first deal. And that next deal, I will guarantee you, Josh, they're going to have a list of investors waiting, chomping at the bit to get into that next deal.
Boom, that's huge. Bernie, how can the listeners get a hold of you and Mike?
Yeah, you can do Bernie or Mike at ElementalEquityLLC.com, or just go to our webpage, ElementalEquityLLC.com, and sign up for the investor club.
That's awesome. Well, listen, I want to thank you both for an amazing show and sharing the Movers and Shakers story. And guys, listen, if you like the show, please leave us a review. And until next time, let's make it a Movers and Shakers week. See you, everybody.
Imagine earning a degree that prepares you with real skills for the real world. Capella University's programs teach skills relevant to your career so you can apply what you learn right away. Learn how Capella can make a difference in your life at capella.edu.